little things apply as time goes by.
Rick, you've got to hide me. This music is driving me crazy. If I hear Freebird one more time, I'm going to beat myself senseless with the Maltese Falcon.
Get out of here, you pipsqueak. I stick my neck out for nobody.
But, Rick, radio is not like it was in the days of Casablanca.
And you look like you could let your pants out a few sizes, shorty. So what?
I know with the recession we can't afford Sam anymore, but we bring back those days with homegrown radio, NJ.org. They have all that wonderful music.
Homegrown, huh?
Yes, Rick, just like the old days. Log in and tune in 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're truly the station that dares to be different. Homegrown Radio, NJ.org.
You're listening to the Mike and Morp Show. This is Dan Byrne on Homegrown Radio, NJ.org.
Getting pretty tired of these guys walking around in cowboy hats and cowboy boots. You ever see these jack-offs? Can't we kill some of these motherfuckers walking around in a fucking cowboy hat? Grown man. It's not even Halloween, for Christ's sakes. I say, hey, Tex, grow up and get yourself a wardrobe consistent with the century you're living in. Why do certain men feel the need to dress up as mythic figures? You don't see anyone walking around in a pirate costume, do you? When's the last guy you ran into had on a Viking outfit? Make-believe cowboys. Closest they ever got to a cow is when they stopped to take a piss at an Arby's. And camcorders. Here is technology gone berserk. Everywhere you go now, there's some dick, some yo-yo, some putts with a camcorder, and he is going to tape everything. Doesn't anyone in this country just stop and look at things anymore? Sort of take them in? Maybe even remember them? Is that just a strange notion? Does experience have to be documented and brought home and saved on a shelf? And do people really watch this shit? Are people's lives so bankrupt they sit at home looking at things they already did? These guys are so intense, you know? It's always guys. They won't let women touch the cameras. It's a highly technical skill. Look through a hole, push on a button, big skill, and they all think they're Federico Fellini. Ever seen him here with this? Low angles, zooms, and pans, and it's the same ugly three children in every goddamn shot. All the George Lucas magic in Hollywood is not going to change the unfortunate genetic configuration on the faces of these children. Keep these unfortunate youngsters out of public view.
love that you paid for, or was it for the love that we'd made? Yeah, yeah.
Good evening and welcome to the Uncle Floyd Show.
Uncle
Floyd Show.
Oh, wow. I'm getting more popular than I can handle.
You got another show already. This is the Mike and the Morp Show. And I'm sorry, we were talking to Floyd. We have a guest in the studio. Uncle Floyd's with us, Floyd Vivino, of many years fame. So we're really glad he's here. Welcome, Floyd.
Thank you, guys. Pleasure to be here. The streets are packed with people waving to me.
Yes.
Yelling, move, you idiot.
There's a line of individuals waiting.
We just broke through the door, Mike.
Well, this is the way to end the year, huh?
Yes. So welcome to our New Year's Eve, as we call it. And we're going to be here till midnight playing music and discussing whatever comes to mind. So I hope you will join us. But before we go any further, so Floyd, for those folks that are too young, like 20 years old that may be listening, you started, when did you, you came from a whole musical family, didn't you?
Yeah, showbiz on both sides of the family, my mother's side and my father's side. So we didn't know, me and my brothers are pretty well known, you know, musically.
Jerry
and Jimmy. Jimmy leads the band on Conan, and Jerry plays sax. I remember when he started with, Jimmy started with the Dovells, and Jerry with Frankie Valli.
Wow.
Yep.
I know, I've seen him with the Fab Four.
Yeah,
he's great. He could play multiple instruments, right?
My brother Jimmy plays 11, yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
11?
He plays everything.
Wow.
He was supposed to be a trumpet player, but I wanted to be a trumpet player. Well, my father was old school. My father played the trumpet, and he made me play the piano because he felt I had limited music ability. And he figured I could make a buck as a piano player. Piano players could fake all night. Doesn't matter. They're really...
Is that what they call your career now? Just a big fake. The big fake.
No, you can't. Anybody can play. Especially if you're working alone. It doesn't matter. But in other instruments, you've got to be precise if you're playing with guys, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You can't fool around with a trombone or a guitar.
Bass guitar, really specific, right?
The easiest instrument to play is the bagpipes. If you make a mistake, who knows?
Who knows?
Tambourine. Rim shot. You get to hang at a tambourine. That's pretty cool. Can't mess that up too bad. What a triangle.
So,
the triangle.
When you were growing up, how early were you? How young were you when you started playing?
Everybody played. We all played. My father's uncles played. My family had the Vivinos had the Plaza Ballroom in Patterson, which was the big dance hall. And in the orchestra of 13 men, eight of them, any one time, eight or nine were Vivinos. The other guys were Bucky Pizzarelli.
Oh, okay.
Yep, he plays a guitar player there. And, you know, local guys that really made good. So on my mother's side, my grandfather ran the Italian immigrant shows in Lazzara Music Hall and the various old-time music halls. We're still around.
They're still there?
No, they're all knocked
down.
Parking lots now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Plaza Ballroom's gone. The old theaters are gone. It's all ripped down.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. It's in the blood. You got no choice.
So you started early then.
As a kid, I was in the Steel Pier in Atlantic City as a tap dancer, as a little boy. Then I played piano, and I just went at 16. I was in high school, but technically I didn't graduate. I told them I'd go to summer school if they gave me a fake diploma. They used to do that then. They give you a fake diploma,
right?
And then you'd have to go to summer school, but nobody went to summer school.
Right.
Let me just get to work. What am I going to go to summer school for? I'm not going. This was it for education. So there's a little bit of rebel in the show, people. You know, we don't like to.
Yeah.
We don't like
good
the
stuff.
Lockstep.
We like that rebel stuff.
Yeah. So I took off and went up mountains and worked, and I haven't stopped since.
So
good for you.
You started the Uncle Floyd show on television in 1974. So what led up to that? How did that...
Nixon got on the air on television in December 73, and he gave the famous No More Gas speech. There was a gas shortage starting. He said, we've run out of petroleum. No more dinosaur fuel. Nothing is left, and it's over. So I was working in Florida on circuses and traveling around. We played indoors in the winter, and I says, I'm going home. I'm going back to Jersey before I get stuck down here. Already we were siphoning gas. People were. Oh, yeah. Siphoning gas out of cars parked in parking lots and that kind of... It was getting bad. And, you know, the younger listeners are not aware of this because nobody talks about it, but it was pretty serious.
Yeah.
So I came back up north, and I went to a cable TV station, a UHF station, UHF first, and I told them a lot that I had a TV show in Albany, New York, and they said, okay, you can start Monday. And I says, okay. It was that simple.
Right.
It was very things
right.
were so loose.
Right.
And he goes, I said, how much money am I going to get? He says, your producer will pay you. I said, who's the producer?
You
were. I was. I ended up buying the time from the station. I signed a contract that I had to pay them.
It was a timeshare.
Well, more or less, it was called air broking. And it was legal, and it was very popular then. That's gone, too. Where you paid the station, you paid the crew, you paid your cast, and whatever was left after the nut was paid, it was yours.
That's like what we do here, isn't it? We do that here.
Yeah, but here at least you get pizza once in a while.
Well, we had to get the producer.
Yeah, our producer paid for that.
The producer paid for it, yes.
No, you have a nice display of potato chips.
Yeah, we do a nice job. We just go like this.
The world's smallest tangerine.
I mean, yeah, Pete. Is Pete here? Where'd you get those tangerines, dude? What?
That was tax bigger than that.
That was a grapefruit. That wasn't a tangerine.
Well, to you.
But, you know, most people Cheers. Are family business. You know, Absolutely. People had hardware stores in the family, schools.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Drinking. Yeah. Happy New Year.
Yeah. Happy New Year.
Cheers. Here's to my nose and over it goes. It's an old.
Well, you were talking about the gas crisis. I remember that because we were in high school, and our teacher, two of our teachers would let us go during their class to wait on a gas line for them. So we would be gone for like an hour, hour and a half, because they were back to back. So we were able to cover it, go to Dunkin' Donuts for them, or whatever the coffee shop. I think they had Dunkin' Donuts back then. Yeah, they weren't as prevalent.
Was it a yellow flag day or a green flag day?
They had the odd and even, I'm pretty sure, back then.
Dunkin' Donuts started in 1956.
Yeah, so they had Dunkin' Donuts. But there weren't a lot. It wasn't like now where you go down, every gas station has one. But
most people had two sets of plates because it was odd even rationing. Yeah. So I had two sets of plates. I had an even and odd, and the letters were considered odd.
Right.
So you just switched the plates when you needed to go.
Most people had. I'd never heard of that.
Yeah, they sold them in flea markets.
You got tired of siphoning the gas.
People never returned the plates years ago.
Yes, tastes terrible.
You guys would nail them to their garage wall.
Yeah.
You know, it was like people put them in their den, license plate display.
I remember that. The old New Jersey plates.
The black old orange and black ones.
Orange and black, yeah.
But it was very loose. Everything was loose. I don't know. Today, everything is so clinical, you know. Paperwork and...
They got reports that
covering
tell you...
Covering asses.
Well, I told you this when I met you just a couple weeks ago, but you were very nice. I walked in on one of your shows. I left work. I worked in Roseland. And I went on Eagle Rock Avenue at the studio. It was probably 79. And... The door was open so I could see, and you were getting changed. I knocked, and you waved me to come in, and you let me hang out. I didn't stay real long, but it was very nice of you because...
Did you catch a glimpse?
We changed right on the set.
Yeah,
we had all guys.
Yeah, it was just changed right there. Yeah, exactly.
And then we had the first camera girls, and when they came in, my guys were very against that.
They're saying I'm getting changed.
They says, look, what are the girls going to... We smoke, we swear. There was smoke. The studios were filled with smoke. There was even drinking going on, but in the closet and away from you. Not on the set. Couldn't drink.
Not like here.
You had a lot of musical guests
over
the years.
And they came
show.
In high, and they came in, and they did what they wanted. And I said, we're not going to change for you girls. If you want to be this business, you're going to be treated just like anybody else. And they says, okay. And they ended up being really great friends of ours, and they took it. Because the guys didn't, and then we became very protective of them.
They were Jersey girls.
Yeah, they were wonderful, but it was new to us.
Right.
We never saw a woman on it.
Sure.
Well, first of all, the women couldn't physically work the camera. They were so big and heavy.
They were
cameramen.
Yeah.
So then the equipment got lighter and lighter, and it's even lighter now. Now today, God, where they hold it in the hand.
Exactly, wear it on your head.
The guys used to sit on the cameras. They had seats. They were that massive.
Yeah. But when we're talking about all the music, who was your... Like the favorite musical guest you had on those shows? Because you had a lot of people. You had Bon Jovi, right? You had the Ramones, of course. David Johansen. Missing Persons, I think.
We had the Skulls. We had the original Plasmatics. We had Cyndi Lauper first.
Yep.
We had hundreds and hundreds of bands. And a lot of them weren't... I mean, Bon Jovi was not known at the time.
He wasn't known at the time, exactly.
Did Wendy Williams blow up a car on your show?
No.
Okay.
No.
She left that for, I think, a Tom Snyder show. Or something like that.
We had groups' names I couldn't even... I don't know if we could say on the air here anything.
Yeah, you could say whatever you want.
We had Barney Rubble and the Cunt Stubble. And they were a punk band. So I said, guys, hold it. I can't say this on the air. Your new name is going to be Barney Rubble and the Constable. And the one guy goes, wow, Uncle Floyd is cool. So they came on the stage, and they dragged out a... They were a punk band from Staten Island. They dragged out a toilet bowl, one of those big old white toilet bowls. And the guy, in the middle of the song, he sticks his head in the bowl, and they had fudge in there, chocolate fudge. And he pulls his head out. I said, this is
He's doing a divine.
And this was on the air, I mean. Groups like the Y.O.'s, we had we had a good mix of bands. And they were all great. The Ramones were on the most.
Yeah, I knew that.
And then David Johansen second amount.
They were New York based too, so it was not like they were coming from far away.
No, and they appreciated the exposure, and we let them do the song. Most of them they did lip syncing.
Yeah.
They didn't care because we had, like I said, we did five shows in 3 hours. The band had no time to set up.
They were just there, and they just
they moved fast.
Now,
the only one who gave me trouble was the Good Rats.
They were on a lot too.
Yeah, Pepe, hey, let him rest in peace. He was a good man, but he didn't like my speed of working. He liked to take his time.
Oh,
yeah,
perfectionist.
I was with him in a club that got raided. You know what that means? The cops surrounded the place in Babylon, Long Island. And I did my little comedy act, and they were supposed to come on. And I went up. I says, Pepe, the cops surrounded the place. They're going to come in, put the lights on. They're looking for underage drinkers. That was the thing. He says, oh, the hell with this. We'll have a riot. We'll get everybody. No, no, we can't do that. There's guys out there.
They got guns.
They'll take us. And I don't want to get involved in that. I'm thinking, he was a character. I mean, they were all great guys, all the punk bands.
Now, David Bowie.
Yeah.
How did that happen? What?
John Lennon was doing the Elephant Man. No, no, no. Bowie was doing the Elephant Man on Broadway, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what it was. In December, I know
Lennon, I think it was.
Lennon got murdered, killed in December. Was it December 9th, 1980?
Yes.
Yeah.
8th. December 8th, 1980.
Yep.
Oh, my God. What a terrible night. And so a couple weeks later, we were at the Bottom Line, and Bowie shows up. And so he comes backstage. First of all, when he's sitting out front, I says, oh, we're dead, guys. The audience isn't going to look at us. Everybody's going to look at David Bowie. And he acted like a fan, and everybody left him alone. They left him alone. And then after the show, he come backstage. And then I asked him when he was leaving, I said, who told you about us? How did you find us? And he said, John Lennon told me.
Ah!
Right. Because Lennon was famous for looking for oddball shows.
Right.
He wouldn't watch the Brady Bunch, John Lennon. No. But he would watch a show like this, or he would like this. You know, a radio show here. Like anything different, you know.
Right.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know how that... I just know
that's
I mentioned you in a song. And
yeah, and then Bowie used to call me up and talk. But I was hung with David Johansen and Charlie Pipp, the Skulls, those kind of guys.
Right.
The Max's Kansas
Blondie
City.
Blondie never came on your show, did they? Because those were all hung with the same people. No.
No, but her man, Shep Gordon, when Shep Gordon took her... was running her. Shep Gordon. Is it Shep Gordon? I can't think of the manager. Anyway, he wanted to sign me, but I didn't want to go. I was doing okay. I made some serious money years ago. Not now, but and I blew every penny of it.
There you go.
I blew every penny of it, just like most entertainers. I didn't care.
You've had a fun time doing it, though, right?
Yeah, it was stupid, but I blew it all.
How long were you on NBC?
It was 12 months. I owed the UHF station $500,000. I had paid a couple million, but I was in arrears. So they said, we want our $500 right now. And this was in 1982. I says, I don't have it. They said, okay, good. We're selling you. Like I was a whore. Ugh. They sold me to Channel 4. The first 13 weeks was a check for $175,000 that went towards my bill. So I didn't get a nickel. My guys didn't get a nickel. They used it in arrears.
Right.
Because they put us on Saturday nights, 1 a.m. to 2 a.m.
I remember
after
that.
We didn't make a nickel on it. But in exchange for that, we start packing theaters and stuff because people saw us on Channel 4. So it was okay. We did okay.
There was always a good time in the show.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed it. You know. And
my guys stuck with me.
It was always like, it was before, like, especially in the late 70s, it was before Stern. And you guys were doing stuff with the puppets and anything you could do. And the Oogie puppet is a great little foil when you kind of just, even when you do your personal appearances, it's just, it takes on almost like a, you think of it as something, like a person almost, you know. So that's why I always.
You used to challenge people in the clubs to staring contests. guys, you get so bummed. I'll take them on a little woodhead. Very. And I try not to laugh. This guy's for real. But we worked a lot. We had the record for working the most at the Bottom Line.
Really?
When that was a hot club. When Alan Pepper and Stanley Stendowski ran it.
Yeah. Yeah. He passed away like a while ago.
Stanley did, yeah.
Yeah, Stanley, yeah.
Alan lives in Bergen County.
Oh, okay.
He's retired.
Yes.
Alan Pepper was the little guy.
Stanley
was the big guy.
Yeah, there was a lot of great shows. Bottom Line, I don't even go into that. But you had the most. You had the most.
We were there the most, and the last show I did in June of 2002, I think it closed very shortly after. It was with my brothers, and my father played trumpet in that show.
Oh wow!
Very cool.
Soupy Sales was in the audience. It was great.
I just like this.
What, Soupy?
Soupy.
What the thing? He called me up one day. He says, meet me tomorrow. I'm taking to lunch at the Friars Club. I said, okay, Soupy. So it was the night David Letterman, the night before David Letterman had a heart attack. And I said, Soupy, what do you think about Letterman and a heart attack? And Soupy said, I don't believe he had a heart attack. You have to have a heart to have a heart attack. I never realized.
He didn't like, Soupy had his enemies.
Letterman did not like what they call costume acts, you know, what Soupy and me were, right. Of course.
Yeah.
That's really old school. He didn't like prop comics, he called them. And I didn't realize Soupy had it. He died the same week Al Martino and Captain Lou Albano died. It was in like around October 20th of 2009.
Oh, right.
Yeah, he was about 85, Soupy.
Yeah, I always enjoyed his show, too. Man, I was young guy. Then, but that was always like the cutting edge.
Frank Nastasi was the guy, you know, with the hand.
And then
you know why he got thrown off, right?
I think you told me, but I don't remember.
It's not the money thing. That is a big farce.
Or the thing about the money thing Green put it in. On
no, that's what every. Time. That's yeah. The story they passed.
Wasn't that about the pie? You said something about the pie, too.
No, the ball game routine.
My wife can't
she
cook.
Kissed
my
me between. The, I kissed her between the strikes, and she kissed me between the balls. Ball. That okay. Wasn't that what got him thrown off.
Okay.
I thought the cream pie. Yeah. No.
No, she can make my banana cream. She couldn't cook, but she can make my banana cream.
No, that didn't get him thrown. This is what got him thrown off. There was a knock on the door. Let me see who it is. Hey, are you Soupy Sales? Yes, I am. Did you see Kay? No, but if you see Kay, tell her I said hello.
I remember that. And this I remember that.
This was the one.
Yep,
so
I remember that.
So this will go on and on week after week. No, but if you see Kay, tell her Soupy say hello.
Everybody started
and
saying that
so
in
little
school.
Kids are at the table having dinner with their parents. Yeah. Hey, if you see Kay, tell her I said hello. The father would go, what? What did you say, Junior? And the mother, oh, Robert, we must do something about our son.
Where did you learn
and
that?
And the kids start saying they saw it on the Soupy Sales.
That's right.
He was on like 4:30 in the afternoon on Channel 5 back then. Monday strip time, Monday through
exactly,
Friday.
Yep.
And that's what got him in trouble. Not the money, but the Monopoly thing and the money. And
I just know he was on one day and he wasn't on the next day.
Yeah. Well, I miss him a lot. He did a lot of quiz shows. He made his money on the quiz show.
Yeah, he was. He was on that.
And his wife was a big diamond importer.
Oh.
Trudy, yeah. She is a big, very wealthy woman. You know, set. They never wanted for anything. But he loved Detroit.
Yeah, he was from Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah, well, North Carolina, West Virginia, and then Detroit.
I know we always talked about Detroit whenever.
Yeah, I love Detroit. It's a beautiful city. Don't you think so? I said, Soupy, you're the only one in the world who'd say this.
I was on the beach in Atlantic City in the summer, and I said I was by resorts, and I'm saying this is Atlantic City's the Detroit of the Atlantic Ocean or the East Coast, because there was a lot of buildings that are empty.
Atlantic City?
Atlantic City.
Here's the worst school system in New Jersey is Camden. Second worst is Atlantic City. How could they, with all that money, they did nothing to improve the lot of the local people.
No, not
a nickel. Not, you can't say this. I mean, you could say it here, but it's true.
Yep.
Where did the money go? In typical New Jersey, where did the money go?
No.
They even
someone's
this
pocket.
They even screwed up gambling. You know, New Jersey took 9 years to build Route 80. This is my favorite New Jersey observation. Ohio, 3 months.
Right.
Indiana, a day and a half. They want to pay overtime. New Jersey, it started in New Jersey, in Patterson. I'm back with that. In 1960, they start knocking buildings down in Patterson. Anyway, Route 80 was finished all over the country, except in June of 69, they were still waiting to finish Patterson. Unbelievable.
We're almost done. We're almost done.
They're worried about the bridge, a couple hours fooling around at the bridge with Christie. That's minor league stuff.
Yeah, right?
The guys who manipulated the Route 80.
Well, they got another thing now. It's called, what is it? The next to the Meadowlands.
Fiasco? Mr. Magoo. Xanadu.
Xanadu.
The blind
Xanadu.
Man. The architect is blind. I did a takeoff. It was on YouTube. We had the guy come through the woods with a stick and the glasses. He's the architect of Xanadu. What a pile of, it looks like a kid took a bunch of blocks and threw them in the air and it landed, and that's the shape of it.
It's like a Lego world.
They tried Lego. That was their artistic.
Oh, wait, actually, Phil worked on that. He's an iron worker.
Worked on that.
Oh, you
stadium.
Union? Yeah, you must be.
Union.
So what the hell? Who's going to go skiing over there? Yeah. I mean,
I
anybody
worked
with
on
money.
That on the roof, basically, but I was inside, and it's I think you would do the run in about maybe 30 seconds.
That's another thing.
I wouldn't want to cancel my trip to Aspen if that was open.
Exactly. People with money ski. Yeah. They're not going to go to Secaucus.
I think it's just for basically for kids to have fun. Like an adult, if you're there and you're like lightning on skis, you'll go through the wall at the bottom of the hill, you know.
Nobody's having fun
like
in Xanadu right now.
It's pretty steep. It's a pretty steep incline, but it's so short.
They were going to make it a water park, but the water is going down to the bottom.
Yeah, they're going to take it out of the swamps.
You know that area, you know what that area was? You know who ruined that in Meadowlands? Who ruined that? The Dutch. That was all cedar trees.
Really?
The roots are still there. And the Dutch were so tough when they, at the time of New Amsterdam and all that.
Right.
Yep. And they saw those cedar, there was cedar forests. And they says they cut everything. I don't know how the hell these guys were like animal men. They cut them with axes. They loaded them on ships and brought them back to Holland.
No
all
shit.
That cedar.
Made shoes out of them.
This beautiful wood. It doesn't rot. It never
rots.
Cedar
yeah.
never rots. The roots are still down there. But they killed the nature.
Right.
They destroyed. Right. And it was loaded with clay. There were clay deposits. Unbelievable. With clay all over the place.
Hey, the mob would have never had a place
to
bury guys.
I know somebody recently, since the 80s, they cleaned it up. They took the
quote unquote
dump and they built what was that? The
that thing.
The restaurant.
That
with
restaurant.
The knights.
Oh, that. The
medieval, times.
Medieval
times.
Right.
They built it over the dump.
Yeah.
And they put in an environmental center. And a person I work with was involved in the environment and stuff. And we go to the environmental center in Secaucus. And I said, you go there? Yeah. They have boat rides, like nature things through there. I said, do they have the contest guess the remains? Because all I think of it is like bodies. You see like an arm sticking up or a hand as you drive by. I mean, because that's what I remember. I remember in 73 and 74, I graduated high school. I worked for one summer for Rutherford, the township of Rutherford, and I did garbage for 2 weeks because they, I fill in
you're
for vacation.
You're a true Italian.
Well,
and I
you're
went
a
to
true
that
Italian.
Dump, and the dump was like
right.
all filled. I mean, and they finally closed it up.
They were going to try to build Aqua City there first. That was the first plan. In the mid-60s, they had drawn up plans of making a water city. Like Venice. Oh, man. They got to be out of their mind. Seriously.
They have those condos in Secaucus.
It's really ridiculous. Yeah, well.
They have those condos in Secaucus or on Berry's
Aqua
Creek.
Aqua City. I mean, only in New Jersey. Molasses.
A swamp. Yeah, positive. Think positive. I see a Xanadu.
Gondola.
I see a Xanadu here someday.
Well, that didn't even have the original name of the Hudson River was the first river. And then the Hackensack River didn't even rate a name because it was so windy and weird. And the Passaic River was the second river. Those were the original names.
And that was the number one river.
Passaic.
Number one on every
it's Rainbow
list.
River.
Oh, man.
Changes color. There's giant turtles in there. I swear to God. Something's going on.
The three-eyed turtle.
I think it's the Loch Ness Monster.
The three-eyed turtle.
The three-eyed turtle.
I used to see people fishing in that when I was.
They
crazy.
Still do. There's sunnies. They get sunnies. Carp.
Well, I guess
there's
if you
carp
just
in there.
Fish, but I wouldn't eat it. Some people.
It comes in its natural oils. Mobil, Exxon.
They're actually preservatives.
There you go. It stays.
It never freezes anymore. It's impossible to freeze.
I can't. I never
it
saw
can't
it frozen.
Gasoline does not freeze.
Mercury. There's all mercury in there. Jeez.
There's a $1,000 fine for throwing a match.
Or a cigarette.
Cigarette, you'll have an explosion. You got to laugh because otherwise you can't live with this stuff. You ever see the rotted trees on the riverbanks of the Passaic? I mean, everyone is deformed.
Those are trees?
They're mutations.
They are mutations.
It's not very pleasant. I used to live like a block from the Passaic River. I lived in Rutherford.
That explains a lot, Mike.
Yes, I know. We used to go down and shoot fireworks over the river and stuff.
Oh, that's dangerous.
There's still river firemen on the river, right?
I guess.
What are they?
I don't know.
How do you get a job like that? We get a call every 8 years.
Is that plane that plane right next to Rutt's Hut still there?
I know.
It used
I remember
to be on the river.
Hut.
That one guy had his plane. Is
seaplane?
Seaplane right there. At Rutt's Hut.
You're
a
Rutt's
like Hut
Rutt's
guy?
No, I'm not. I'm a Texas Wiener guy.
Oh, all right.
I respect Rutt's. I like the Ripper, but I like the Patterson. What's so funny?
We were in there one night.
Yeah.
After a Ranger game, we go there afterwards, and my buddy and I walk in, and we definitely had a good time at the Ranger game, and I go, we got to find out the secret of these hot dogs. Let me ask the chef. Well, my friend laughed his ass off that I used the term chef
right.
to the guy behind the counter, and he said, secret recipe. Yeah, well, we haven't changed the oil since 1954. We just keep adding to it.
The truth is they fry them in butter. The butter makes the skin of the hot dog rip open.
Right.
When it gets hot enough. And
who
knew this? It's a unique taste.
How did you find that out? That's excellent.
I got a lot of time on my hands.
And you don't even have a computer.
No, I have no computer.
Yeah, this is a man that's not connected to the internet.
You have a skillet in your house? If you have a skillet, little frying pan, heat it up, throw some butter on it, and then throw a hot dog on it.
And it's
that
split.
Hot dog starts to blister right away. And that gives the skin, pops off, and gives it that bubble effect. And then if you leave it on long enough, it'll split. It'll rip.
Oh, ripper.
That's called a ripper.
Oh, I thought they used to deep fry them. They don't deep fry them.
Well, they do to save time.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because you could deep fry it in 3 seconds, whereas my way
it's
takes a minute and a half, 2 minutes.
It's in butter.
Yeah. We're losing a lot of and money then.
Well,
you can't
seriously,
put
you got to move fast. You ever see those guys eat it there? Oh, my. The workmen that come in. Three. Nobody orders less than three.
Yeah, at least three.
One Frenchy one.
Do you ever go to the Russian Hall?
The Russian Hall in Singac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every food.
First of all, I'm not a fan of Russian food. I don't like the color gray.
You have to make sure you move. It's like the suit Nazi line. The lady doesn't like your attitude. You may not get a sandwich that day.
It's that like lunch. Place, an old place.
It's like a lunch line. Like, I mean, like high school lunchroom. The food is good, but I'm just saying it was just.
They got a beautiful catering upstairs because I worked there a lot for Knights of Columbus dinners.
Are they still? They still?
I haven't been there in a couple of years. I don't know.
When I worked in Roseland, I worked with these guys. Let me give you an idea of the type of guys I work with. Two of them were ex-military guys. Their idea of lunch was to go to the supermarket, get a can of sardines, the big ones, not the little ones, then stop at the liquor store next door, get a quart of beer and two airline bottles of Zambuca. That was their lunch.
Wow.
I mean, it was
what kind
like
of sardines, though? In oil or
in tomato sauce?
Oh, no.
The biggest. I never saw. They were like carp.
They came out of the Passaic. Opened a can.
That was the kind of. I mean, I wasn't eating that, but it's like ex-military guys. I don't know.
But we joke about New Jersey, but New Jersey is one of the only states left that can still feed itself. We don't need it. We could literally live off of what we have here, and counting the ocean. A lot of thanks to that too. This state is amazing. The history here, there's the river keeper, Sheehan is his last name. And they've cleaned up a lot of the river. There's things coming back. And it was such an important, you know, that they were the highways of the years ago. You know the brownstone in New York City? All that came from New Jersey, you know.
Oh, the stone.
All the brownstone. They don't have brownstone in Brooklyn and Queens. They don't have it in Manhattan. Manhattan is shale, rock, shale, whatever they call it. Hard granite. Mm-hmm. They don't have that soft. You ever see the way they pull it out? It comes out like sheets of paper.
Right.
And the mountains of Jersey have the brownstone. But they'd load those slabs on boats, barges, on the Passaic River, float them down to Newark, right into Newark Bay. And then right across Newark Bay, they bypass Staten Island. They go right to Manhattan, the low end of Manhattan and Brooklyn, and they'd unload the stuff there.
Kidding.
That's where it came from. West Patterson, there's still quarries up there.
You should do a show, The History of New Jersey.
Nobody cares.
And you'd walk around, like almost like the
that.
Guy from Monty That's Python that did it. Was it Terry Camp? I can't think of his. Not Terry Camp. Terry, one of the guys of Monty Python did a history.
Terry Gilliam.
Terry Gilliam did a history thing. He did it serious, but with his own point of view. And I thought it was,
I did stuff like that. I did. We went to Hoboken with a camera once, and
I saw your show once on cable. you walked into a bakery. You go, what do you have for free?
Right. Free samples.
And the guy would give you like a cannoli, and you say, this is the best cannoli I ever had. And then you say the guy's name.
We would go for free samples. Today we went to a place called the Nut House in Westwood.
Yep.
So the girl behind the counter says, what do you guys want? I says, we wonder if there's any free samples. She says, get out right now. So we went on the sidewalk, and I went back in. I says, can we just have like one nut? One nut. So she says, no, get out. So then I went back in. I says, can we have like half of a peanut? Just half of like a split peanut? And it was... So New Jersey.
I don't know. The Nut House.
But we went to Hoboken, and we did a documentary on Where Did Sinatra Live was the name of the show.
Right.
Everybody was an expert, and they all gave us different addresses. Frank? Yeah, I went to school with Frank. Yeah, he was at 415 Madison Street. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, 415 Madison. The next guy. Oh, yes, I was with you, Frank Sinatra. Was he my friend, my neighbor? The guy's been in the country 8 weeks. Frank Sinatra lived at 222 Monroe Street. Monroe Street on the third floor. Okay, thank you. And we, at the end of the show, we had like 28 different addresses. And we did a crawl. We let him go by, and the audience read where they all. In other words, people in New Jersey, never mind Kentucky and Louisiana, we could tell tales.
Yeah. That's just, for sure. That's for sure.
How about the list of where Uncle Floyd lives?
That's true, unfortunately.
That's a long tale.
No, but you told me a lot of people come in, oh, I know where Floyd lives.
Oh, no, that's true. I love when people say, oh, you look like Uncle Floyd. You ever hear of him? And I go, yeah, a lot of people tell me I look like him. What is he? You know anything about him? Oh, yeah. One guy told me he lives next door to Yogi Berra in a mansion in Montclair. Really? One night I'm playing piano in a piano bar, and a woman says, you look like Uncle Floyd, elderly woman. I says, I'm his son. She goes, so she in front of the audience, she goes, I could tell you stories about your father.
Oh, really?
I saw it. Really? She says, yes, if we have a private moment together, I will tell you about your father. I said, okay, lady. People are laughing.
Great stuff.
Yeah, people.
So you're going to be playing on January. Are you? You have another gig on January 2nd. Where are you playing?
On January 2nd, I'm on Route 23, the old Regency House. I still call it. I think it's still called.
Still
that.
The Regency.
It's
House.
It's a beautiful comedy club in there. One big show, and I don't know the name of the. It's promoters promoting it. I don't know. I just
Is
know
it
called
the Comedy Shop or Comedy
I think
Stop?
So. Yes, Comedy Stop. Yeah. Well, the sign. There's a big sign on Route 23.
I didn't know they had a comedy.
They have
club
a room.
In there. Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, and they're good people. There'll be two acts before me, and then I go on, and it's reasonable. It's not a clip joint. It's beautiful, really nice.
Go to the Pompton 23 Diner across the street. Very good.
Really?
Excellent corned beef hash. Best corned beef hash in New Jersey.
You like diner food?
It depends. It's good.
Does
you know.
Look like he likes diner food.
Yes. Thank you.
I love diner food.
Yeah.
You know, there's people who come to New Jersey and they say, I was in New Jersey. Man, you guys have some kicker diners. Your diners are the best. They are, really.
Oh, I know.
They're the best here.
Oh, yeah.
We take them for granted. We don't even... They're all good.
We used to go to the Candlewick in East Rutherford on Patterson Avenue or Patterson Plank Road.
The Lido on Route 22, the Bendix on 17. These are
Bendix
legendary.
Bendix is classic. That's like...
That's legendary.
Yeah, that one was in a couple of commercials for Viva or whatever.
Because the truckers went there. And the truckers meant you're getting big portions.
But it was a classic diner look, you know, that 50s.
Well, the diners were created in New Jersey. The Silk City Diners in Patterson was one of the first diner companies. What they did is they designed them after a railroad car.
Yep.
That was the shape.
Right.
And Patterson had a couple of diner factories. They sent them all over the country from Patterson, New Jersey. Yeah. But they were the old wooden ones, too, the concrete and wooden ones.
Yeah.
You still see some of those in, like, Elizabeth and area and Newark area. They're all on side streets, though.
Yeah. The one in Ledgewood they're trying to save.
Tom's Diner.
Really?
Oh, it's an old... Yeah. It hasn't been... It's been, like...
It's to look at.
Mm. It's, what do you call it? It's
falling apart.
Yeah, dilapidated, deserted.
You can't leave a building unattended, you know, and it just deteriorates. So, it's like, you ever go away for, like,
they
2 weeks?
They said about Mike, too.
No.
You can't leave him unattended either.
You go away for 2 weeks, you come back to your home, all of a sudden the sink doesn't work.
Right.
The toilet doesn't flush. What the hell happened? Nobody was here. The window doesn't open. The door locked.
They were lonely. They missed you.
In Atlantic City, they're worried when they close a casino, they have to keep operating the elevator around the clock.
Oh, absolutely.
You can't stop those things from moving.
No. Things are designed to move.
To go from the ground one, from first floor up to 35th floor in 8 seconds, I mean, that's high maintenance, right?
Sure.
We gotta imagine the guy who has to go in there every day. Okay, let's go. There's a skit in there somewhere.
There's a skit in that somewhere.
Day, that's a great job to have. I mean,
that's the key job.
He's got to go there and just go up 35 flights.
But if the elevator rots out, if they got to rip that out of a hotel, you got a mess.
Oh, sure.
You can't rip those out, and that's the worst disaster.
They build around them, I think.
They usually do. Right, they put the shaft up first and they build around it, exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I know.
I don't know about the worst disaster, though, Floyd. The worst disaster?
Watching my act?
No, not at all.
Come on.
I'm in Atlantic City next week.
That's right.
Yeah. Around here again.
I'm always here at the Knights of Columbus for some 30 some odd years.
In Booton,
yeah.
Where is that?
On Church Street.
Right up the block. Church Street.
Really?
No.
You don't know this area? You walk here. Oh, you're giving me a plug.
I know the Elks, but yes.
It's the Knights of Columbus Hall.
Oh, Knights of Columbus, not the Elks.
Men only. It's one of the last all-male beefsteaks. And some young women get, well, why is it all? Well, because men like to be with men. There's never a fight. Yeah. There's not one ever.
A lot of farting.
You have 400 men in a room. There's never one fight.
No beans allowed.
No. If you have 390 men and 10 and women, there's going to be 18 fights. Honest to God.
It's human nature. I can't help it.
But the men wanted to relax. They wanted to eat as much as they wanted without their girlfriend saying, you're going to have more? Didn't you have enough? Shut up. And wives do that to their husband. Oh, come on. You've had enough now. That's enough. We're going home. They ruin the night.
When is enough?
Men want to be with men and eat and pile up. And they raise money for charity, too.
Well, that's the key thing.
Yeah.
That's the key thing.
So Atlantic City in a week, and you're going to be there for a week.
The Borgata, yeah. The Borgata Casino. That's the Marina District.
Yes.
They're not threatened by this collapse of Atlantic City. The Boardwalk District. There's two Atlantic. Actually, technically, there's two Atlantic cities. There's the Marina District, which is up in the north.
Right.
Yep.
To get there, you get off before the exit 40, not 38.
Exactly. Right.
You get off a little north, and it takes you through Absecon.
You take route 30.
Exit 40 for route 30.
That's right.
That's how I always go.
That's right.
It's all backwards.
You save the extra toll.
Yep.
And you're there in no time.
You get to see the windmills.
Yeah, past the windmills.
You get to see the windmills.
That was the Mercedes dealer.
Exit E, I think it is.
I had somebody convinced it was the Mercedes dealership.
Oh, really?
I said, you can't miss it, because we were in Brigantine. I said, you can't miss it. There's a big Mercedes dealership with five big wheels. Yeah. When you see that, you know you're going to get to the left and follow the signs for Brigantine.
But, you know, everybody... I'm not kidding.
They really believe me.
I've worked in Atlantic City since I'm a kid, and I know the town. And let me tell you, when they built the Revel, everybody there knew. You know why that land was empty all those years? That's where all the ocean brings all the dead shells. No, worse than bodies. The dead sea life.
The stink on
that beach. You can't breathe in that area.
Right.
And in the summertime, the horseflies are like birds. They're gigantic. They pick up stingray shells. There's dead stingray. Every kind of shell crustacean that dies ends up the way the ocean drifts everything, whatever.
Right.
The current, whatever it is.
Sure.
And garbage is there, and it stinks. And I said, they're going to build this kind of a place on this land? That's why it was empty all those years. How stupid. I mean, but they never asked the little guy.
Didn't ask you.
No, but
let me go forward.
I could have asked anybody on Atlantic Avenue.
Sure.
Should we put a casino there? They'd say, are you out of your mind? An inlet belongs there to catch all this crap.
Sure.
Well, the Borgata is in a good spot.
Extensive seaweed. Yeah, the Borgata's clean. The Borgata. And
Harrah's.
Harrah's, the Water Club, and the new Golden Nugget. The original Golden Nugget was downtown.
Yeah, the Golden Nugget. Yeah, and that's a different area. You can't walk. You got to drive there. It's not really.
Atlantic City hit rock bottom in 1972. I worked at a Capitol Burlesque Theater, and I stayed at the Stanley Hotel on Pennsylvania Ave. It was $35 a week. To give you an idea, I'd make $35 a day, $35, $40 in 1970. $40 a day was okay pay. And so one day's pay for a show paid the week's rent in the hotel. But it was scary. I was afraid to walk home at night. I really was. It was eerie.
It's not. Yeah, 1972. Nothing was there.
It hasn't changed. You come one block off of off of the boardwalk.
Isn't that a shame?
You can't walk there.
Well, Ducktown was the... See, Atlantic City, the southern end was Italian. The center was Irish and Jewish. And then a little west was African-American or black.
Right.
That's how it was. They just took the sign down for Chicken Bone Beach. No, seriously, it was a segregated area. Oh. The blacks were not allowed on all the beach. They only could go to Chicken Bone Beach. And that was in the center. And they just took the sign down.
That said about Chicken Bone Beach?
Yeah, they took it down, but they paid it a historical reference. But, you know, it was very segregated.
Sure, sure.
And nobody thought anything up until the mid-60s, late 60s even.
Right.
Anyway.
Let Doug sit there for a minute.
Doug was trying to say something.
Doug wants to say something.
Who's Doug? No.
He doesn't have it. Uncle Buggy. Uncle Buggy.
Uncle Buggy's in the house.
Uncle Floyd, Uncle Buggy. Nice to meet you.
Yes. What do you do here?
I'm Cousin Mike. I go by Cousin when Buggy's around.
Uncle Buggy.
I call Cousin Jeff.
Jeff is your
cousin. But I don't think he's going to make it down either.
I appreciate the opportunity you've given me to be part of this wonderful station.
Now, by the way, Uncle Floyd is on our station, a syndicated show, every Friday from 11 to noon.
To mid-noon.
To mid-noon. I would say midnight.
Mid-noon.
To noon. Mid-noon. That's valid.
It is, actually.
Every week. Check it out. It's excellent. I've listened to it myself, and I think it's very cool.
Do you ever take calls from, like, you don't have that?
We have the ability.
Sure, we have
the
ability.
Someday, when the show builds enough, I would like to do one of those here someday.
I've told you. I'd like you to do live show here. It'd be great.
Yeah.
We could set that up.
We could just call out if you want. That's the best way to get calls on this show.
It's better to call
out.
It's
by calling out. We call, like, the pizza place, call the Chinese place.
Actually, I'm in constant fear when I'm here that the phone's going to ring because I'm not sure what to do about it.
Yeah, you push this button.
You press the button.
You push call.
I've done it.
And then you go, what the fuck?
Shit, it's not working. Oh, there's a hum in the system, right?
There could be a hum. You have to worry about the volumes, too.
A lot of radio shows, it's the same people call all the time. Even, like, the biggest shows, national shows. There's a group of people that call, and that's like 99% never
call.
The same people all the time.
They're
the ones who play the contest.
They're the fans.
The contest.
They're
people.
The fans.
It's the same people. Yeah.
Hey, we got the same people that listen to our show. They're our fans.
Yeah, we got some very good fans.
We love the people that listen to our show.
Susan up in Buffalo. She's probably listening tonight.
Susan's listening in Buffalo. I know. She listens to every show.
God bless her. God bless her. She keeps us honest.
Yes.
Right.
She reminds you. She goes, aren't you supposed to be on now? I said,
oh, yeah.
Have you ever been to Buffalo?
No, I haven't been to Buffalo.
Oh, man.
I have been there once. I went there for a big rock concert. I don't know, Dead and Allman Brothers.
Not earlier this year. Not in November.
It's like when they had
17 foot of snow.
No, snow's
up there. Like, they get that lake effect snow.
Yeah. This last one, though,
you know,
they weren't ready for that at all.
Three blocks difference. My aunt lived three blocks from where they got, like, 12 feet or 10, whatever, and she had like 3 inches.
Yeah.
It was just
Susan had the same kind of thing, you know. By the way, what I was going to say is Floyd's show is not the loose banter you're hearing here tonight.
No, not at all.
It's actually a music show, and it's just amazing the stuff you hear that you would never think of. I remember the first time I played one of your shows at home, my wife said, who's that singing? I said, that's Jerry Lewis. Oh, he sings?
Oh, yeah.
And that was great. It was fun.
He played the drums pretty good, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have records of him as a drummer.
Mm-hmm.
Who's that, Jerry Lewis?
Yeah.
You know what gets me, though, and I love Christmas, but I can't take it when you go in a store, it's the same 10 songs over and over.
Right.
Oh, wait a minute now. Not here on Homegrown.
No, I said when you walk in a store.
No, here we hear the same 10.
Every year, the one song that I do that I always get heckled about from my partner in crime here is one of your favorite acts that you had on your show. Tiny Tim.
Oh, yeah.
Doing Santa Has Got the AIDS This Year. Have you ever heard that one?
Yeah, I have. He made two Christmas albums, Tiny Tim.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yes.
Really bizarre.
And this year, what was the other one that I found that was so... There was another one that was super bizarre.
Wow.
That... I can't think of the song that we found out there.
Yeah, I played a bizarre mix this year.
Stuck in the Smoke Hole of Our Teepee? Have you heard that one? That's a good one.
By Tiny Tim?
No, that's not Tiny Tim. That's not Tiny Tim.
Did you meet Tiny Tim?
Yeah, I was on the road with him. I was on the road with Tiny, Dr. Demento's road show.
Oh, really?
And Tiny Tim, and again, I love the guy, but I'm not talking... He did the number one thing in showbiz you don't do is go ask everybody how much money they made.
Oh, right.
How much money? Oh, I'm just curious. How much money are you being paid for this performance? And Andre the Giant was one of he goes, he goes to Weird Al Yankovic. Oh, Mr. Yankovic, how much are you getting paid for this show? Which you don't do in our business.
Sure, sure.
You never. And first of all, no actor is going to tell you the truth.
Right.
If they make 100, sure. They'll tell you they made 1,000.
They made 1,000, right.
If they made 1,000,000, they'll tell you they made 800.
Right.
They never tell
they
you
never
the
tell
truth.
They never tell you the truth. Right.
No.
Well, the other one that I had this year was Mae West. Did you know Mae West put out a Christmas album?
No.
A this wild
is, this
album?
Is why you never master this hobby. Wow. I never heard of Mae West having a Christmas album.
Yep, she did.
You probably have it, you just don't know it.
The
fascinated by this.
Santa Baby was actually written for her.
Well, Eartha Kitt.
But Santa Baby was written for Mae West to do that song.
Santa Baby.
Yes.
Come up and see me. Well, it makes sense, yeah.
Santa Come Up and See Me is one of the songs that I play, actually.
When he's not
she
playing
wonderful.
When I'm not playing Ween.
What are you guys playing for New Year's? You playing anything special for New Year's?
We're playing rapping with Uncle Floyd right now.
I mean,
we're just having
that.
A good time
How did
here.
You acquire the Mae West piece?
I overheard it from somebody, and
oh, you don't have the physical
power?
Property?
The power of YouTube is where I ended up finding it. But, you know, I mean, Mae West doing Wild Christmas is the album that she did in 1963, I believe it was, or 64.
She was only like 90 then, right?
Yeah.
She was born 1890, so she probably was. She was 74.
Yeah.
Is there anything you don't know? You're incredible.
I don't remember where I parked my car.
Dude,
you know, one thing about records and oddball music, you never master the hobby.
Sure.
You could master stamps.
Right.
You could master coins. Coins are easy to master because there's only every year.
Right. Right.
But music, you could never live long enough. Nobody on earth could live long enough to hear. Like 1/8% of all the records ever made. There's not enough time.
Sure.
Not enough time.
Look at all the CDs behind us here. Look at the CDs behind us here.
You'll never,
I don't know any of them.
And they're the crap ones.
I don't know any of them.
You'll never hear everything. There's no way. And they'll never put everything on YouTube. It's impossible. It would take years to do it, number one.
Sure.
Now, your mission is collecting labels primarily, right?
No, that's a disease, Doug. Labelitis is a disease.
Oh, that's not your disease.
No, I was going to open a clinic for record collectors. And the worst.
So you're a record collectaholic?
I'm addicted to black crack, as we call it.
Black crack.
That's
black
it.
Crack.
Yeah. Black crack is vinyl.
Yeah.
And
so clear vinyl is not a problem.
Yeah. The colored vinyl.
There's guys who collect color. Color guys are, oh, man, they're anything, Kitty Records. They make mobiles and they put them in, right. Like they spin around and yellow and green, blue.
Yeah.
They had colored records as early as 1923. Brown, they were mixing them. Vocalion had a brown instead of black.
Right.
Then they made mixed colors. Then basically the Kitty record started the color.
Yeah, they used to come out in yellow and red and orange.
Yeah, green.
All yellow colors. Red.
It's you're not gonna,
but Doug, you're not going to name all the colors of the rainbow now, are you?
I'm done.
Do you know who invented the first unbreakable record? Flexible, you could fold it and bend it.
I'm scared.
This is no. Everybody says it was during World War II, the V discs for the military, mm-hmm. so that they wouldn't chip and break the 78s. But that's not true. Marconi did in 1910.
Marconi.
He had Marconi Record Company, but he was nuts. You know, a genius, but. And it didn't go on.
Most of us are.
They've said that about you, Uncle Floyd.
He had records that were like paper plates that you could fold them and bend them. And in 1910, Marconi records. I have a few of those. They're very rare.
Really?
Marconi.
I say Joe Franklin. I want to say, Doug, is your radio here to stay?
God bless.
Let's see.
Then you got the paper Beatle records or I don't know what they are.
They
came in magazines.
Probably
and
wax on
no,
top of paper.
Beatle fan club. They came out with a Christmas record from 63 to 69.
Right.
63 was just like a little flimsy vinyl thing.
Was it bendable?
Yes, it was just like a foldable? Piece of paper almost. And then by 68 or 67, I think it was actually a single, and. The last year after they broke up, what they did was they put all of them together in an album and sent you the album. So it was a compilation of all the years because they didn't have one in 1970.
I didn't keep
that's
up
the
my
year
subscription.
I joined. That's the year I joined the Beatle fan club. They broke up.
I joined the Beatle fan club. I got like a
package. You're the reason.
Is that the reason why?
That's the reason.
I got the package in the
mail. It wasn't Yoko.
I got the record.
It was you, Mike.
And that's
it. Was
it.
Not Yoko.
Please.
Oh, do you ever think we'll see anything like the Beatles in our lifetime? Anything like the Beatles again?
I don't know, but it's just like Derek
There's
Jeter.
No way.
You never thought you would see another
player.
I think
Justin Timberlake's pretty good.
Oh, I'm going to
say Justin Bieber.
We just dropped off the air.
You'll Thanks, never Doug. See another Jeter, but you'll see a good shortstop. But
I meant that I never thought I'd see in my lifetime somebody break all those Yankee records. Not that he was the best player in baseball, but for what he did. That, I'm just saying, I never
Wayne
thought
Gretzky.
He would.
You've seen Wayne true. Gretzky, right? Will you
hockey.
Ever see another
hockey.
Wayne Gretzky?
That's not an American guy. Sport.
That's Canadian.
That's okay.
He's a big hockey fan. He likes
You like the Devils?
No. He's
What's your team?
I'm a Rangers fan. Was a Rangers fan at 5. Then the Devils came around.
Who was Roger Bear? Did you ever hear of Roger Bear?
Absolutely, yeah.
Ranger.
He used to like me. And seriously, back
He doesn't
in
like
early,
you anymore?
No, in 1972, he used to come to a club in New York
where
I played.
I'm sure he would have, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't really understand the English. But he liked my act.
That's probably
he was French-Canadian, right? Yeah.
I think he liked you to get to David Bowie.
Him and Esposito was
Esposito,
on that
Phil
yeah.
Esposito, that's right.
Yeah.
He used to be with the Bruins. Boston Bruins, originally Phil Esposito.
Yeah, so it was probably right around 77, is that what you're saying? 76, 77 is
yeah,
around
a little earlier
time.
Even, yeah.
Well, I think Espo came to the team in 76.
Oh, then it was,
so
you're right, then you're right.
Right around there.
God, time plays games with you sometimes.
Well, those guys like to go out and have a good time. I think that's really what it came down to. And, of course, if you were out doing a show, it would be a good time, no?
Oh, athletes were the best nightclub customers.
Yeah.
They pounded. They drank.
Yeah.
They needed a break from all that.
And they were
going to
stay up late.
I had my own club. Well, it wasn't mine. My cousins ran it, called Uncle Floyd's in Wayne for 3 years.
Right.
And one Father's Day at the bar, I see 4 guys, and they're looking at me, and they says, "Hey, tell that Goomba to play some Goomba music." So I looked at these guys. Who the heck are these guys? Yeah, he's a Goomba. I said, and I had a drummer and a guitar player with me and a bass player.
Right.
I says, "Guys, just vamp and play around. I'm going to go see who these wise guys are." And as I'm getting closer, I go, "Who'd you got?" It's Hank Bauer. Hank Bauer was an outfielder on the Yankees.
Right.
At the time, now, this
he
is
became a manager.
2001. He was born 1922, so 79 years old. And he was the Marine. He was a tough guy.
Right.
So I go, "Holy mackerel, you're Hank Bauer." He said, "That's right." And I said, "And you're Moose Garin, first baseman of the White Sox and Yankees."
Yep. Right.
And next to him was Cal McClish, pitcher.
Yep.
And next to him was Jake Gibbs.
Jake Gibbs, catcher for the Yankees.
So I told them all. He says, "Oh, you know your baseball, huh?" I said, "Yeah, Hank, you were born 1922, East St. Louis, New York. Bill Scarron, you were born 1931 in Chicago. Jake Gibbs, 1939. And Cal McClish, you had the longest name in the history of baseball. You have like 12 names, and you were born 1925 in Kentucky." So they go, "Wow." Because when I was a little kid, baseball cards, that was our...
It.
So we didn't have the internet.
Sure.
We memorized baseball, the backs of the cards.
Yep.
And they were so intrigued. So then I made a big mistake. Then I said, "Guys, whatever you want to drink, wait a minute. It's on me." Holy mackerel. These are not young guys. They had a driver bring them there. They were there for Yogi Berra's golf thing.
Right.
And they came to the Holiday Inn nightclub where I was.
Oh, your
and
neighbor.
The bill
the,
was
with
like,
the mansion, right?
Yeah.
Your neighbor.
I'm out like $350.
Jeez.
I was making $250 a night. I'm out. I lost. And it's Father's Day on top of it.
Well, no wonder you remember their names and all their stats.
My God. But they were intrigued. But Hank Bauer was the Marine.
Right.
You know.
He was the Goomba guy.
Yeah. Well, you know, Mickey Mantle, you like baseball? When Mickey Mantle reported to the Yankees, Casey Stengel said, "You know why you're here? You're here to replace the Big Dago." So Mickey Mantle says, "Who? The Big Dago?" He's a country boy from Oklahoma, never heard the word. So he goes, "Who's the Big Dago?" So he goes up to Yogi Berra. He goes, "Hello, who's the Big Dago around here?" So this Yogi Berra says, "I don't know, go ask Phil Rizzuto." So he goes to Phil Rizzuto, "Who's the Big Dago on his team?" So Rizzuto goes, "Go ask Frank Crosetti, third base coach." Crosetti sent him to Vic Rasky, the Italian pitcher. Vic says, "I don't know who the Big Dago is. Go ask Joe DiMaggio." That's all Mantle had to do. And that was the end of, DiMaggio did not like that.
Hey, Joe D, who's the big dago around here? So he was 19 years old.
Oh,
he's
wow.
a country bumpkin. I mean, I say that affectionately. I love Mickey Mantle.
Sure.
He's the only man in his family to live past age 41. They all died of the black lung.
Right.
They were miners. They were tough people in Oklahoma, miners. Yeah. They smoked in the mines, these guys.
Right.
They're breathing in all kinds of...
The mine's not bad enough.
Their black lung killed men. They never made it. They died a terrible death, too. But he figured, oh, I ain't going to be here long. So he had a party. That's what he died at 63, remember?
Right.
He said, if I knew I was going to live this long, I would have taken care of myself.
As he had a drink.
Oh, Lord.
On well, that new liver.
What we're going to do now is we're going to go to spots.
Spots?
We have to do some spots because it's been about an hour.
We got a guitar in the house, too.
I want to thank you guys for this opportunity and to plug
my
show.
About?
Fridays, Fridays 11 a.m. to 12 noon.
12 noon, not 12 midday.
Yeah.
12. 12 midday, too.
Where could we check out website?
Do you have a website? Or
what do you got going on with a website?
Actually,
anything?
They what they do now is like the Borgata has their own website.
Right.
Everybody has their own website. So
there's no
garage sale music. Garage sale music.
Go to garagesalemusic.com. Has some stuff.
Yeah, that's
but
it.
Friday night I'll be in Route 23 at the old Regency Hotel. It's a beautiful hotel, a comedy club there.
Cool.
And then 9 o'clock, and then I'll be at the Borgata.
For a week.
A casino the week of the 5th.
Great. And Tom Holmgren sent you, and he'll shake your hand.
That's right.
You
get a free pine float drink. You know what a pine float is?
No.
A glass of water with a toothpick in it. Come on.
Hopefully it's at least a mint toothpick.
Yeah, it's a minted one.
Anyway, thanks for this great opportunity.
Thank you so much for coming in,
Uncle
Floyd.
Appreciate you coming in.
Floyd Vivino, everybody. Thank you. Stick around. We got some more music. We got Phil Conklin in the house. And we'll be right back. Stick around.
Thank you, guys. I hope it was good.
Insane!
Yeah, that's been done, and that guy went to jail. No, I need something that screams out for tasty, spicy, delicious barbecue.
Yes, sir!
Get me the Hoboken Eddies. Hoboken Eddie, winner of Chili Pepper Magazine's famous fiery food challenge, over hundreds of entrants. Eddie uses only high-quality ingredients dashed together with an array of herbs and spices that are never thickened with cornstarch nor produced with animal products, fats, or oils. From surf and turf to barbecue corn, from chutney chicken to kamikaze kielbasa, and including Eddie's brand-new concoction, Homegrown. For more information on Hoboken Eddie and his fantastic sauces, log on to www.hobokeneddies.com or call 201-653-8080. Hoboken Eddie's, it's hot. This is listener-supported Homegrown Radio, broadcast around the world from donation to donation.
I'm not Bjorn Borg. You're listening to Homegrown Radio, NJ.org.